You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 10th of July 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Yes, the weekend is here once again and you know what that means? It means we have Grandpa Lampshade with us today. Grandpa, good afternoon to you, sir. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good until I realized the implicit. You know, we've been lectured so much on explicit racism, and now I'm starting to have to consider the implicit racism because I'm sitting here in the prestigious broadcast studios, as I used to always call it, aka the master bedroom. And now I realize that being a master bedroom is racist. It's like a slave master bedroom, which you know, in and of itself may sound ridiculous, but after today's story spin, not so much. We have to do some serious reflection here on our implicit racism, put it in the same box with all of the microaggressions that we're committing every day without even realizing it.
We sure do. I don't really understand this problem with using the word master. You know, when you say master, I instantly think servant. Or you instantly think somebody who is an expert at whatever it is they're doing, the master, and he has his disciples. You don't instantly think master slave. I mean, that's completely alien to me. That is not the first thing that I think of. But this is a big issue. Apparently, the growing Black Lives Matter movement has caused many people to rethink how they approach several areas of life, seeping into company policies, police reform, entertainment, and education, amongst other things. Now, many of the words and phrases that we regularly use are getting revisited in an effort for linguistic equity. And this is the new term here, linguistic equity. Several words that are a common part of the English language are getting reassessed for having racist undertones or origins. Among some of the more explicitly racist terms are master bedroom, which can evoke the imagery of master-slave relations on plantations. Tech engineers have used the words master and slave to describe software and hardware in which one process controls another. And a blacklist is a term that refers to a collection of people who are excluded. I don't think this has anything to do with race, though, does it? I mean, you don't just get black slaves. There were white slaves. There were Red Indian slaves. I'm sure there's been Chinese slaves. Master, that doesn't have any racial connotations. The word blacklist, I think that comes from Black Bull, which was a Masonic term, something to do with a black ball that people would find that meant that they were no longer a part of the Masons, I think, so is it something like that? This is absolutely ridiculous, Grandpa. What do you make of this?
I'm trying to think of the fact that since you and I have no doubt been blacklisted in so many ways, does that mean, like, you know, we're part of the brothers now? Hey, what do you mean you're not? But what do you mean I'm not black? I've been blacklisted. You know, linguistic equity. You know, just a few short years ago, we talked about things, novel ideas like slippery slopes and how this never ends. And people laughed. People said, oh, no, it won't get that ridiculous. And we've already surpassed the stuff that we were talking about being ridiculous, and we have gone into a whole new realm of ridiculousness. Now, I was thinking that why should this be relegated? to the English language. For instance, in Spanish, I think we need to be talking about racism in Spanish, because the Spanish word for black is negro, which, if you look at it spelled out, looks like negro, which I guess is racist, although I don't know. In technical terms, I think it's still a accepted technical term, but maybe it can't be anymore. I don't know, because it's constantly changing, and that's part of the agenda. They constantly change what's acceptable. Every day it has to be something new, and this is why I think it's so hard. I mean, once you're blacklisted like we are, you know, it's just kind of like, well, you are, you know. But for people that are actually a part of this Marxist movement, it must be tough for them, because they have to stay on top of it. They have to stay current all the time, you know, and what's acceptable and what's not, because things they might have been saying the week before might be acceptable then, but then a week later the words have all been changed, the meanings of the word have been changed, and so now what they've said a week ago is suddenly racist, and they get purged. So, you know, it must be tough for them. Also, the country of Nigeria, that looks awful racist to me. I think we should petition for the country of Nigeria to change their name, because it evokes imagery of racism and racist terms. There's so much that you can just keep going and going with this. If you have a vehicle that has a hydraulic manual, you know, manual transmission with a hydraulic clutch, the part you put the fluid into is the master cylinder, and the part that actually does the work and pushes the clutch in at the bottom is the slave cylinder. So now you have master and slave working together, and they're connected by a line, which could, you know, provoke imagery of the master, I don't know,
chain gang?
Forcing sex on the slave or something. I don't know. It just, you could just keep going and going with this.
You could. I mean, what about Nigeria? I mean, that's possibly even more of a dangerous word than Nigeria. But they talk about linguistic equity here, and you think, well, hang on a minute. You can't say black anything. If you say black and then you say a pejorative after that, then that's racist and that's banned. And yet we see the word white supremacist in headlines. Everywhere we see white supremacists. They're trying to turn white nationalist into a bad word as well. So it's quite okay to insult white people, but it's not okay to insult black people. And to say that words like master bedroom is racist, I mean, this is just insane. As I was mentioning earlier, I mean, you think of the master and his disciples, or you think of master and servant. I think there's a famous Depeche Mode song which sings master and servant in it. You don't think master and slave, and even if you did, there's no racial connotations in that unless they are there within your mind. Anyway, this is all about just hammering white people, isn't it? It's getting white people to not even be able to think properly in our own language. It's bad enough that we have words that other races can use quite happily, and that we can't use ourselves, words that we invented ourselves, our own language we are banned from using. But now they're trying to say that there are all these other words that we can no longer use because they have these connotations. Well, some organizations have taken steps to try to change this. The Houston Association of Realtors announced in late June that it would be replacing the term master bedroom with primary bedroom in its listings. The Court of Master Sommeliers, a prestigious organization that grants the coveted title of Master Sommelier to select wine experts, announced in a letter in late June that it would stop using the term master before a sommelier's last name. Part of what brought us all to the hospitality industry and to the Court of Master Sommeliers is a deeply ingrained desire to serve others. That desire, we know, was a crucial guiding light on our journey to becoming master sommeliers, the letter reads. Let us use that light now to do our part to effect the change we know is possible and necessary. Well, what are they going to come up with instead? What are they going to use instead of master sommelier now? They're going to say primary sommelier? It just doesn't make any sense. This is just complete insanity, and it's putting a block on the way that we think, and it means that we're trying to self-censor ourselves before before we even speak, which means that we're going to end up being tongue-tied. And of course, this doesn't apply to anybody else. It only applies to, it's only white people that are going to have to, that are going to have to do this and self-censor ourselves before we speak, because of course the persecuted minorities, they don't have to worry about doing anything like this. It's just us privileged white people that have to self-censor. Have you ever heard of this sommeliers before? It's a new term to me, Grandpa. What do you make of this?
Yeah, no, I have no idea. I don't even know what that means. It's like when you whip off those British terms that I have no idea what they mean. I just sit there and roll with it because I figure, yeah, whatever. But, you know, the ridiculousness of it serves a purpose. It really does. I mean, we can sit here and talk about how stupid it is and how, from a logical perspective and say, well, this is obviously on its face ridiculous, but that in itself serves a purpose, because the more everybody goes along with it, it is a form of submission. And the more the ridiculous and absurd the demand is, the more you have to submit to go along with it. And so that in and of itself is part of the programming that we're seeing all of this going on. Because, you know, this is about a larger agenda, and we can laugh about the absurdity of it, but that is the dark undertone here. Oh, dark undertone. That might be racist. I might need to revisit that. But no, it's the more ridiculous, the more absurd the demand, the proclamation, the more submission is required to, you know, on your part mentally to go along with it. And I just say that I read a story the other day, and I know we've got some other stuff to cover here, but I read a story the other day, and it was a perfect example of this. There's a country group that I don't listen to, but anyway, and it's called Lady Antebellum. Apparently they were popular several years back. Well, I read a story that they changed their name because Antebellum, you know, that relates to the South, and that could make you think of slavery, because apparently the South is not known for anything but slavery now. So they changed their name of their band to Lady A. I don't have any idea what the A is even supposed to stand for, but anyway, they changed their name to Lady A. Well, it turns out that there's a black woman soul singer who's been using that as her stage name now for years. So now basically they're suing her because they're like, yeah, no, that's our stage name now. And so it just, the clown car keeps rolling, Sven.
Well, you think about it, master. I always thought master was the term that you used for a young man before he was a mister. He's classed as a master. And a young woman is classed as a maiden, basically. Are they saying now that all young men are racists? Obviously only white men, but young men, when you address them as master, that somehow means they're racist? Of course, we know that what they do mean is that all white people are racist. But it does seem to be that there are more and more normies that are actually waking up to this, but as well as telling us that our language itself is racist, we're now being told that our fictional characters are also racist. And the Daily Express has helpfully provided a report on this and also told us where statues of the fictional character can be found as well. And then they asked the question, will his statue be next to be toppled? And of course, the fictional character that we're talking about here is Sherlock Holmes. The famous fictional detective Sherlock Holmes has been denounced as a racist in the wake of the Black Lives Matter movement. Literary experts say Arthur Conan Doyle wrote crass racist descriptions in his novels about Sherlock Holmes. Arthur Conan Doyle, who created Sherlock Holmes, was born in Picardy Place in 1859, with a statue being erected by the Federation of Master Builders to mark its 50th anniversary in 1991. So they're helpfully telling us where this statue is. They're telling us that this federation here that built it, they were racist themselves, of course, because they're using the term master builders here. And experts are telling us that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was a crass racist because he wrote these descriptions about Sherlock Holmes way back there, 150 years ago. What do you make of this thinly veiled enticement to go and destroy a statue of Sherlock Holmes, Grandpa?
Oh yeah, yeah, they is exactly what it is. They're basically putting out a hit on the statue, and it'll no doubt happen, you know, or either that, or it'd be like here, you know, they tear down the statues here, but then you have the heroic conservative or Republican run municipalities. And their answer is, we will thwart them from tearing down the statues by taking them down ourselves. Ha! We show them. And it's like a logical person sits here and says, well, it's the same end result. You just did it for them. Yes, but we didn't let them do it. We did it. Ha ha ha. We show them. We took it down ourselves so they can't tear it down. It's like, yeah, but it's the same thing. Yeah, no, obviously, yeah, they're telling people this is where you can go next. You know, maybe trying to give them a little direction, because some of the statues they've been tearing down have been, you know, absolutely ridiculous as far as, like, they have nothing to do with anything. I think they've even tore down, like, some statues of black people. There's anything that looks like an old statue, it's getting tore down. So, you know, they're trying to give them a little direction now. Make sure they target the correct statues.
Well, they actually give us a direct instruction of where the statue is. They say the statue is located at Leith Walk in Edinburgh, opposite the house where Conan Doyle was born. So maybe they're encouraging people to graffiti the house as well as pull down the statue. In one of Doyle's novels, The Adventure of the Three Gables, one of 56 Sherlock Holmes short stories published in 1926, he writes about a moment in which Holmes stares at the hideous mouth of a huge Negro and tells the savage, I don't like the smell of you. And I'll just stop there. I mean, this is, what is this, 1926, he is writing this. Now, we have different races in the world, and you would expect, just because the fact that we do have these different races, that they would find the other races unattractive. And just the very fact that we have different races tells us that it is natural to find the other races unattractive, because if people did find the other races attractive, they would interbreed with them and we wouldn't have different races. So it's quite natural for him to look at the mouth of a Negro and describe it as being hideous, finding it unattractive, because it's not a mouth that reminds him of his own people. It's not a mouth that reminds him of himself. It's quite natural to see that as being hideous. And he also says he's a savage. And we're talking 100 years ago. And Africa was very, very savage 100 years ago. There are parts of it today that are still extremely savage. And even the bit here where he says, I don't like the smell of you. Well, again, people do smell different. Different races do smell different. And we have smells that appeal to our own people, pheromones to attract our own kind. And also these smells repel others that are not of our own kind. It's rather like dog's pee will not, a cat won't like it, and a cat's pee, a dog won't like it. And if you want to scare horses, you just throw down some lion dung. And, you know, the animals don't like the smell of other animals. It's quite natural what he's writing about here. And he's just writing it in, obviously, in non-politically correct terms, because this was written 100 years ago, and yet they're bringing this up now to try and project our sensibilities of today onto the sensibilities back then. And meanwhile, in The Sign of the Four, the second novel featuring Sherlock Holmes, published in 1890, Doyle describes the Aborigines of the Andaman Islands off the coast of India as naturally hideous, having large, misshapen heads. Well, I'm sure to the Aborigines off the Andaman Islands off the coast of India, they look quite normal to one another, but they don't look normal to us. They have different shaped heads to us. And to say that they don't is really, it's the definition of the emperor wearing no clothes, isn't it? If we say that, oh yes, they have perfectly beautifully shaped heads, when they don't, they're completely different to our heads. And what do you make of these descriptions here and the accusation that they're somehow based on racism, Grandpa?
Well, it's all, of course, hypocritical and bullshit, because you look at the same, you know, because this is being promoted by the media. This is the amplification we're hearing about this ridiculousness from the media. I mean, these people, if this was just random people coming up with, you know what I'm offended about today? I'm offended about Sherlock Holmes. You know, none of these people that are going to get offended about this have ever even read Sherlock Holmes. They might have seen like a Sherlock Holmes cartoon when they were kids on TV. That's the extent of their knowledge. They haven't, any of these people probably even read Sherlock Holmes. So this is being amplified and promoted by the media. That's why you're hearing about it. That's why you're reading about it. And they're telling you what to think about it. Now, in reflection, look at the same media today when they're trying to constantly right now stir up like animosity with China. And what do they basically say? They're savage dog eaters. Look, they eat bats in a soup. They're just like animals. They're disgusting. You know, but that is somehow, that's somehow, I guess, not racist. That's somehow A-OK because that promotes the narrative that they're trying to promote at the time. So it is all utter rubbish. And here in the States years ago, they did the same thing with Mark Twain, you know, with his writings, because same thing. They used terms that are today deemed you're not allowed to use them. Isn't it just amazing that the level of control now is what you are and are not allowed to say. These words that you are and are not allowed to say. And it's not like it's equally applied. If some people are allowed to say those words, that's okay, but you are not. You are not allowed to say those words. And it's all about submission and it's all about control.
That's amazing, isn't it? We've gone from being told that we shouldn't be reading anything written by Adolf Hitler to being told that we shouldn't be reading Arthur Conan Doyle. We shouldn't be reading anything about Sherlock Holmes because he's a racist. I mean, they're going to be telling us that Winnie the Pooh is the racist next. Well, Dr. Merrick Burrow, lead professor of English at the University of Huddersfield, told the Times of Scotland, especially in the early Sherlock Holmes stories, there are crass racist descriptions. There is no question that the language used to describe people of various ethnicities is inflammatory, offensive, and insensitive by any contemporary standards. And that is the important point here. By contemporary standards, you wouldn't be writing things like that. You wouldn't be saying things like that. But this is 100 years ago, and it shouldn't be judged by today's standards. It should be judged by the standards of 100 years ago. I think we'd just done away with slavery by about 50 years. And again, it was the British people. It was white people that did away with slavery. And instead of thanking us for that, we're now being told that all these statues have to be pulled down because they were put up by slaveholders, which isn't true. I mean, if you're going to say that things have been built in Britain to do, and it's been built on the funds from slavery, what about things that were built in Africa? It was Africans that sold Africans. It was African chiefs that sold the Africans to the slave traders. So they might as well start pulling down everything that was built in Africa. Oh dear. Oh yes. They didn't actually build anything in Africa. They just spent the money on buying more slaves. Well, the stories are almost all narrated by Dr. Watson. And Dr. Merrick Burrow says there is a racist framework of descriptions of immigrants in negative terms. And again, this is just something natural, really. I mean, it's like really when you support your football team and you run down the other football teams. It doesn't mean that you hate the other football teams. It doesn't mean that you hate the supporters of the other football teams. But you support your own football team and you think they're the best. And it's the same thing with your country. You support your country, you think it is the best, and you're going to run down other countries. And that is just the natural way to be. And there is a competition between countries as to who's the best. It's not about supremacy. And I doubt very much that Arthur Conan Doyle saw himself as being a hater of other peoples or immigrants or whatever term you wanted to call them here. He was just writing about them in the common way that things were spoken about back then. What do you make of this Dr. Merrick Burrow's analysis of this, Grandpa?
There's nothing inflammatory about it. They're simply using the terms that people used in those days. Those are the terms that people used. And we could see this just, you know, here. I mean, in the past several decades, you know, used to be Negro was the official term that you used to describe black people. And then it became colored, but you can't use colored anymore. That's racist as well. I'm not even sure. You know, then it was black. I'm not even sure if you're supposed to be able to use black anymore. It changes all of the time. But yet they at any point in time, then they can go back and point to the acceptable use of the term. And now say, well, yeah, but retroactively, that's not acceptable. You know, you think of how laws aren't allowed to be retroactively enforced. If you did something that was legal at the time and then 10 years later, they pass a law and say, well, that's illegal now. You know, it's kind of a common sense thing that you don't go back and start prosecuting people for breaking law 10 years ago when it was legal. But yet in this context, this is exactly what they do. You know, things that were acceptable terms that were used at the time. Now they want to go back and retroactively prosecute these people. And the idea of this, it really galls me, these people having the nerve to go back, to go and use terms like, you know, classifying this as inflammatory. These are the same people that love to use inflammatory terms like white supremacists, which nobody even knows what that's supposed to mean. Everybody's a different idea, but nobody's ever actually defined what the hell that even means. It just means a bad person. You know, how about Nazi? How about Nazi? How about that being an inflammatory term? And yet it gets thrown around at anybody who disagrees with the commie agenda all the time. Nobody ever gets called out for using these inflammatory terms. If we're trying to stop inflammatory terms and bring everybody together to have a conversation about race, how about we start doing away with all of the inflammatory terms? Of course, we're not going to do that because, once again, none of this is being approached honestly. They aren't being honest. They're completely dishonest in this stuff. It's about erasing your culture. It's about erasing your history. It's about erasing your culture. It's about erasing anything that you could be proud of. You have to tear it all down, and we're starting from year zero. This is everything. Your history is gone now. Your history will be defined by us starting today. What was good a year ago? Too bad. That no longer exists. Now we're starting new from today. We will tell you today what is acceptable. And heaven forbid, last week you did something that was acceptable then, because that no longer exists by today's standards. We have declared today that that's bad think, and we're coming after you.
I think we're supposed to call them POCs today, aren't we? Persons of color. That's the latest politically correct term. And BAMI, or Blackened Minority Ethnic. But I'm sure that will change over the next year. And in a couple of years' time, just calling them persons of color or calling them black and minority ethnic will be classed as being racist. I mean, it has to be, doesn't it? You know, we've changed from the so-called N-word to Negro to black to colored to people of color to black and minority ethnic just in my lifetime. So I dread to think what will happen over the next few years, and people will just be looking back and I mean, they are already, aren't they? They're claiming that J.K. Rowling is she's a transphobe. They're already going after people that were judged as extremely liberal 10 years ago and now going after them and saying that they are somehow anti-feminist or anti-trans or they're racists. And again, it just highlights the fact that all of this is just anti-white. Well, Dr. Burrow sensibly claimed the author should be judged by Victorian standards, stressing that Doyle's crass characterizations were fairly typical of his time. She added, there is a massive difference between someone who is a slave trader or who waged military campaigns and someone who wrote books. Exactly. So why is the Express, which is supposed to be a conservative right-wing paper, why is it highlighting this, and why is it pointing out where the statute is, and why is it bringing up this language? If they're going to say that it's inflammatory language, then why are they printing it in their newspaper? It really is like a deliberate provocation to people to go and attack this statue. Well, Jonathan McCafferty, the president of the Sherlock Holmes Society of London, admitted there was lamentable instances of language in the novels. However, he stressed the author campaigned for years to secure a pardon for an ethnic minority solicitor convicted of maiming a pony. Doyle claimed the solicitor, known as George Edaldji, suffered a miscarriage of justice because of police officers who were being racist. Now, this is interesting because this term racist didn't really appear until about the 1930s. I think there's evidence to show that it was Trotsky, I believe, that was first using this term racist as a way to silence opponents. And that was much later than actually at the time of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, I think. So it's interesting that they say that he was concerned about somebody being racist, but I can understand him being concerned about a miscarriage of justice, because much as they try to say that our ancestors were racist and looked down on these other peoples, we very much supported the concept of law and order and justice. And there are lots of instances of our ancestors stepping in there to protect these non-white races when there had been miscarriages of justice, such as Baden Powell, who was accused of starving the black tribes, and it was actually found out that in actual fact he killed all his horses to feed them horse meat and went without food himself so that he could keep these tribes well fed. And what we have here is this Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who is being accused of somehow being racist, and he's stepping in here and campaigning for years to secure a pardon for this ethnic minority solicitor. And having read the books written by the slave owners, I would say that is characteristic of white people being actually concerned about these other races. That's why we went into their countries in the first place and brought them civilization and medicine and taught them to read and write and built all the railways, all the transport infrastructure that we built in their countries. And we wanted them to be eventually to be able to maintain their own civilization. That was the general drive that the white man had. It was never about ruling over these people and using them as slaves. I mean, but before we even did away with slavery, we brought in all these laws for how they were supposed to be well treated, so that they weren't badly treated. It's anyway, Grandpa. What do you make of these final comments here from Jonathan McCafferty, the president of Sherlock Holmes Society?
Well, I'm reminded of a story that Robert E. Lee, concerning Robert E. Lee, the famous Confederate general, that one Sunday at church, a black person, a black man, walked in and walked down the middle of the aisle and knelt at the altar and began praying, and everybody was aghast because it was considered that blacks don't have souls. And that was the predominant view at the time. And this black guy walked in and knelt in prayer, and everybody was aghast. And General Robert E. Lee got up and walked down the center of the aisle and knelt down beside him and joined him in prayer. But you won't hear about stories like that because, again, they're creating a narrative. As you've pointed out here with this statue thing, see, they've told everybody where the statue is. They've provided the justification, the provocation. I mean, everything is being set up. Meanwhile, people such as us, with our little corner of the internet, we have to be very careful how we parse our words, that if you don't stand on your head and close one eye, it could be considered incitement to some sort of violence, some sort of criminality. But yet we have a quote unquote mainstream publication here, and they're obviously inciting violence. They're obviously inciting destruction of property. They've given a detailed instructions, map, as it were, of where it is, where they can go. They've given the justification, and they've provided the incitement to go destroy property and probably commit all kinds of acts of violence. But yet that, once again, that is A-OK, because that fits in the narrative, and that fits in the agenda. And while we can continue to point these things out, it's nothing surprising. We can't be surprised by it because we see this happening over and over again. It's obviously part of the larger agenda.
Well, they have there's a big list actually of statues that the left want to tear down. This is something that's been going on in America for quite some years now. I can recall discussing it 3 years back, 4 years back, on podcasts about the statues that were being pulled down. And of course, the Charlottesville process was to try and prevent the Confederate statues from being torn down. And I can remember wondering, how long is it going to be before this sort of thing starts happening in Britain? And now it is happening all over Britain. I guess the one positive thing that we can take from this is that the general British people don't want this, and they are absolutely shocked and aghast at what is going on. And attacks on Lord Robert Baden Powell, on his statue, and on Churchill, and now there could possibly be attacks on Sherlock Holmes. I mean, it can only play to our favour, really, because it means that people are going to realise that this is not about going after people for slavery. This is not about going after people for being racist. This is about going after people because they're white. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.